Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Chris Brown again with you tonight, and we will be taking a look at the just completed OTAs that took place on the practice field here at One Bills Drive. We'll also talk to former Bills receiver Donald Jones, who's looking to build a new sports career after a kidney transplant. That's all coming up next.
This place is pandemonium.
Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And good evening, and welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO here on this Thursday evening, June 12th, 2014. Chris Brown here, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Jay Harris on the other side of the glass, and obviously I'm filling in for Murph, who is under the weather this week, as we mentioned last night. We have an abbreviated show for you this evening, as coverage of Game 4 of the NBA Finals from Miami will be coming your way at 8 p.m. here on WGR Sports Radio 550. San Antonio leading that series 2-1. So that means get in early if you want at 803-0550 if you want to be part of the show tonight, or 1-888-550-2550. News of the day here at One Bills Drive today. Players closed out the third and final week of voluntary OTA practices, and it was a better day for the offense than we had seen in the previous 2 days this week on Monday and on Tuesday. Fewer passes wound up on the ground, and there were fewer misfires from the quarterback, so the execution was better, and there were not as many plays turned in by the defense, which was the case on Monday and Tuesday when they were logging interceptions and a host of pass breakups. Among some of the better plays turned in by the offense, E.J. Manuel dropped an over-the-shoulder pass into Chris Hogan early in 7-on-7s as he got behind some safeties that were cheating up on the play. Lee Smith snared a high-speed pass that came in just over his head on a seam route for what ended up being a 25-yard gain from Manuel. Sammy Watkins took a quick slant pass, and folks, this guy tore up the field and likely would have outrun the safety to pay dirt for what would have been a 70-yard touchdown in a true live football setting. During red zone work, Robert Woods pulled in a manual pass for a touchdown on a post pattern. Rookie Caleb Holly, an undrafted rookie who seems to be popping up here and there every couple of days, he had a touchdown pass, and it was one of the best throws of the day from Thad Lewis. It came in the front left corner of the end zone. And Holly had another touchdown later that he caught from Dennis Dixon as well. Defensively, the plays of the day probably turned in by Ron Brooks. He almost came away with an interception as he broke up a manual pass that had Chris Gregg targeted during the red zone period. And Nickell Roby knocked away a quick hitter attempt by Manuel as he tried to get the ball to Watkins out in the right flat. For head coach Doug Marrone, it was a positive showing for the offense, and E.J. Manuel as the OTAs came to a close.
I'm excited because I think what happens is that a lot of times, even players, you know, a lot of times you're looking at the end product, you're looking for end results. But, you know, for us, we're looking for those steps and where he's going and what he's taking. And really, when you look at the volume that we have in, which is really full scale, everything right now, the things that he's made a great amount of improvement of things that he didn't do as well last year. And it starts with the foundation, you know, with his footwork and the things that are going on. So I'm really excited about where he is and the amount of stuff that we put on his plate. And I think everyone should be. I think normally what happens, it starts with the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator, myself being an offensive guy, the people in the offensive room. But now it's getting ready to go on to, you know, the players, the team, and everyone else, and he's getting ready to take that step.
It seems to just the offense hasn't always looked that smooth. do you agree with that, or is that normal? I mean, you know, typically, or especially early in training camp, we're in spring now. What do you think about it?
I'm happy. I'm really happy about where it is. You know, I'm happy about where our, you know, the ability that we have in our matchup potential now and what we're doing, the ability where we can put different players. There are things now that we can do that we couldn't do last year. So, you know, from that standpoint, I'm happy. As far as, you know, when you go on the field and you're looking to try to keep score, you know, I think it's tough. I think there's moments all the time for both sides. You know, the only one that's ever going to really win out here is really, you know, the head coach, you know, because some days the offense is going to do well and, you know, you're happy for them, and the defense is going to do well, you're happy for the defense. Or, you know, I like to think of it that way, but usually I'm not as happy either way, because I'm always upset with the other side of the ball.
Now, the interesting development that took place late in Thursday's practice was there was some chirping going on between the offensive and defensive units, more than we've really seen throughout the course of OTAs. And it got to the point where when the second offensive and defensive units were on the field running plays, in between plays, Eric Woods stepped out close to the line pre-snap. I mean, he wasn't playing. He wasn't lined up to take plays at that point. He was on the side. He had some choice words where he pretty much ordered the defense to shut up and wasn't that nice in saying it. Of course, the defense is waving him off, like, get out of here, get out of here. And on the next play, the defense got a sack, and then the jeering really came from that side of the ball. Now, in the heat of the moment, it sounds really adversarial, but it seems like the players actually like it, and I think the coaches like it even more because it increases the focus in practice and makes the whole thing more competitive. So after practice, I asked Sammy Watkins what he thought of the jawing back and forth.
Very competitive. I like it. It keeps me going. Keeps me fired up and on my toes to go out there and compete. And keeps us all together as one to know that we're trying to get each other better. And it's just fun. The practice go by so fast, you don't even notice the periods. You don't even know what's going on.
So I thought it was interesting to see that Watkins, even though he's a rookie, he knows that both sides, while they do get into it pretty good, they do know that intensity in practice is a good thing because it dials everyone's work rate up that much more, and he included himself among them. So next up is the mandatory minicamp, which will run from Tuesday to Thursday next week. And Doug Marrone said not a whole lot in the practice setting is going to change for the players.
What we're trying to do is really, and it's, I don't know what other teams do, but it's been, you know, we have the same set of installation all through the OTAs. Then we try to go through the same set of installations, okay, for the mandatory mini camp, and then we hit those installations same way when we get to our preseason camp. Okay, meaning like, you know, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, which is mostly your base, and you can get some third down and red zone in there. So you get that stuff done and try to hit the players three times with it, okay, so their retention, you know, obviously is better. So that's what we'll try to do during the mandatory minicamp.
So those practices will get underway on Tuesday late in the afternoon at 3:15 and run a full 2 hours. Obviously, we'll have full coverage here on the John Murphy Show and also on BuffaloBills.com. Marrone said he expects to have the full roster in attendance. Now, players like Alan Branch and Manny Lawson, who have not been to one offseason practice to this point, he said he did communicate with both players via text, not specifically about whether or not they're going to attend the mandatory minicamp, but he did touch base with those players. He said he believes they will both be here next week. And last year, really, it was the same thing. Both players missed almost all of the voluntary practices, but they were here for the mandatory minicamp. So I think, for all intents and purposes, Alan Branch and Manny Lawson, two veteran players who have been in a host of different defensive systems through the course of their career, are expected to be on hand and be fully participating in those three practices scheduled for next week. Doug Marrone also said that he intends to have Marcell Dareus in the fold as well. As we all know, he was kind of excused from the remainder of the voluntary practices after the off-the-field incident with the car accident that he had. But he said that he has talked to Marcell every day since Dareus has left the team and gone back home to try to take care of, you know, some things that he's dealing with. Excuse me. I sneezed right on the air. Sorry about that. He's trying to take care of some things on the home front. And so Doug Marrone has kept in touch with him each and every day. So he expects him to be back for the mandatory minicamp as well. The last interesting nugget that came out of today's game after practice when Doug Marrone was asked about leadership. When he was first posed the question, he took a long pause after he was asked if he needs better leadership in the locker room. Now, you could tell he was collecting his thoughts, but I thought his approach to it is one that you don't often hear shared by NFL head coaches.
I've learned a long time ago not to try to do that, meaning that what I said before, if you try to say, okay, I want to do this, I want to if you try to force that, I think you're always going to be disappointed. I think you either, you know, you go full steam ahead. The best way to do it is by example, starting from myself and the coaches. And then, and I always say that the best, the number one skill you need to be a good leader is you first have to be a good follower. So, I mean, I've learned that a long time ago. So, hey, if you don't want to stand up there and lead, then just stay in line and follow.
Do you need your quarterback, though, at some point to develop into one of those leaders?
I think it's a natural thing by position. I don't know if you're sitting here thinking that does he need to be this or that. I think all we need him to do is just play well. And he's in a natural leadership position, no different than the center. Eric Woods in a natural leadership position, no different than the middle linebacker that calls the plays is in a leadership position. So I think a lot of times on a team, you know, you have people in leadership position. You just got to make sure you have the right ones.
And do you see EJ taking ownership of that?
I think right now his focus right now is to improve his game. I think every player is right now. We're not – you know, we're into trying to improve ourselves, to improve our game, you know, to follow suit. We're not in that position right now because our team hasn't formed yet. We have a team of 90, you know, that's going to get cut down, and those guys are within competition with each other.
So there's a lot there to digest, and we're going to try to go through it here in these next 10 minutes. But what I want to know is, where do you come down on leadership in the NFL when it comes to players? Do you subscribe to the age-old theory that leaders are born, not made, which seems to be Coach Marrone's position on this? His stance is, if there's leadership on this roster, it'll rise to the surface and show itself. If not right away, eventually. Or are you fine with these coaches filling the leadership void if one exists on this roster? I mean, are there enough leaders on this team already? I mean, we know who the captains were last year, and those were voted on by the players, and that process will take place again just before the regular season, you know, at the end of August, early September. You know, it was Fred Jackson, Kyle Williams, and Eric Wood. Those guys were the captains on this team. And what about the coaches taking on more of a leadership role with the players if there is a leadership void? Are you fine with that? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to get on board. Let me know what you think about the leadership approach that Doug Marrone has chosen to take with this team. Now, you heard him say that he feels coaches have to take a greater responsibility with the leadership if he feels there is a void there. He can't force anyone to be a leader. And personally, I agree with him. And that's what happened last year. And part of the reason that was the case is because the biggest leadership position on the offense, quarterback, was a rookie in E.J. Manuel. And E.J. Manuel was just trying to master all the responsibilities of his own position. There was almost no time for him to really think long and hard about how to best lead the team. He was just trying to execute plays down in and down out, week in and week out. So I think for that leadership position, it was a moot point. You had a rookie that was trying to get his game right so he could lead through execution, not through vocal leadership or, you know, keeping an eye on another player when he's down about not playing well or something. He's there to pick him up. He had to worry about his own play. On the other side of the ball, it was the same situation. You had Kiko Alonso in the middle linebacker role, the natural leadership role, as Doug Marrone saw it, on the defensive side of the ball. There's another guy trying to get his game right, trying to get the defense lined up right. He didn't have time to take on some kind of leadership position in terms of vocal leadership or rallying the troops or anything like that. He just had to get guys lined up right pre-snap and get the call out in the huddle. So two very important leadership positions last year for this team, the natural leadership positions, were manned by rookies. And so because of that, I think we saw the coaching staff step in and try to take more of that leadership void, whether it was on the sideline between series, talking to players, in the meeting rooms, you know, demanding what was needed out of certain players, you know, in certain packages or on certain sides of the football. So this year, I think Doug Marrone is waiting to see if more leaders rise to the surface. He's not going to call any leader out and say, hey, you should be leading more, or hey, we need a guy in this unit to be more vocal, and I want that to be you. That's not the approach he is going to take. He thinks that that leadership will naturally develop and show itself. What do you think? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We're going to lead off this evening with Carl in Clarence. Carl, you are on the John Murphy Show. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing okay.
Hey, they put a man on the moon 50 years ago. Can't they get a microphone in that when we can hear the reporter asking the questions? All I hear is Marrone's responses. That's Bush.
Yeah, but I know anyway, it's tough sometimes. But basically, I can tell you. Basically,
We can do it.
Yeah. I mean, but, basically,
you know, as far as the leadership goes,
yeah.
I think BJ is going to step up to the plate this year and going to start calling some people out when they don't do what they're supposed to do. I know that Eric Wood will, so I'm not worried about that on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm not quite sure who's responsible. It's going to be on the defensive side of the ball, but I'm not worried about that. I think that it'll land where it's supposed to land. But Eric Wood, I mean, here it was with the chirping today. You know, he called those guys out.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he did, and let's just say a lot of what he said was not suitable for radio or primetime television or anything else. Maybe HBO is where that stuff would fly, but yeah, he was tired of the chirping from the defense because the offense was actually having a pretty good day today, and they were still talking garbage, and so he just came out and said, it's time to put an end to that, and he had some choice words for them, basically telling them, knock it off. Of course, ironically, what happened after that was the defense got a sack on the very next play. So the chirping just started all over again, and it just ratcheted everything up. But the coaches love that stuff. They think it's great because really it gets the players to focus in all the more because they want to show up the guys on the other side of the ball. We're talking leadership. Doug Marrone had an interesting take on it after the OTAs wrapped up today. He says leadership has to show itself. It can't be manufactured, and he's not going to go looking for it. He's hoping it just rises to the surface. What do you think? 803-0550. We're going to go to Ken in the Bronx. Ken, tell me what you think.
Chris, how you doing, man? It's a pleasure to meet you over the phone. What I think, it's kind of weird because as it comes, you know, a player got to step it up. A coach can't do it. After a while, you know, the players don't want to hear what the coaches are saying. They got to ask one of their peers, wake up, let's go. You know, it seemed like Spikes might be the guy.
I mean,
it's kind of weird, though, because he's been a one-year guy. He just came on the team, but it looked like he might be the defensive guy for that.
Yeah, no, I think you've hit the mark there, most definitely on the defensive side of the ball. Very early on in these OTAs, you could see that Spikes, as that middle linebacker calling the plays, was a take charge kind of guy, and so it really wouldn't surprise me at all if he fills that leadership void, I guess you would say, at the middle linebacker spot. Ken, thanks very much for the call. I mean, that's a guy that's been there. It's a guy that's done that. He's a guy that's been a leader for teams before, both at the college level and the pro level, previously with the Patriots, as everyone knows. But this is a guy that likes getting people lined up. He is an intense, wear his heart on his sleeve kind of player. So I think everybody right away on the defensive side of the ball knows where he stands. And then I think eventually, if he makes enough plays on the field, because when we were talking to him earlier in the week, he said, I am a guy that's all about production, and I got to back up what I say with my production. He's done that in the OTA setting. I mean, whether he's batting down passes, sniffing out run plays earlier than anybody else, or making an interception or two, which has happened here in the OTA setting, I think he is a prime candidate to be one of those leaders that rises to the surface for the defensive side of the football. I can tell you another guy that I expect to come to the forefront in terms of leadership is Aaron Williams at the safety position. I mean, this is a guy that you say, oh, well, why didn't he lead last year? Let's think about that picture that you know, in the environment that he was facing last year. It's a guy that was taking on a new position at safety, moving from corner. And Jarris Byrd, who was largely thought to be the leader, at least on the back end for the defense, was not in the equation for the first 5 weeks of the season. So you say, well, who else is going to take on that leadership mantle? Well, you'd say maybe Aaron Williams, but there's another guy, much like EJ and much like Kiko, who was trying to master a new position. He had to worry about himself first. And so now in year two for Aaron Williams, now in year two for EJ Manuel, I think as they start to feel more comfortable in their own skin at their respective positions and start to make more plays, I think you have a situation where both of those players feel more comfortable taking on more of the leadership role. And I think that's what Doug Marrone is waiting to see. I think in his head, he's got an idea as to what players are going to come to the forefront in that situation. Now I think he's just waiting for it to actually happen and come to fruition. And really, that's where I think it stands. If you have a comment on this, feel free to chime in, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We are going to head to break, though, as we come up on break time here on the John Murphy Show. But coming up in our next segment, we will have a conversation with Bills wide receiver, former wide receiver, Donald Jones, who had to unfortunately end his career due to kidney disease, which eventually required a transplant. We'll catch up with Donald, let you know where things stand with him as he tries to begin a baseball career in the minor leagues. That's coming up next here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Back here on the John Murphy Show, Chris Brown here with you, filling in for Murph, who is out sick this week. Hope to have him back next week. And as promised, we are going to have a conversation with former Bills wide receiver Donald Jones, who unfortunately had to bring an end to his football career due to health problems, as he'll get into here as we join him in this conversation. And he's got a lot of stuff on his plate now, including what he hopes is a burgeoning baseball career. Here now is Donald Jones.
For me, it was trying to give them a realistic perspective on really what they're in, the business aspect of it, you know, how every aspect, every second of every minute they're being watched. To really understand the bigger picture of the business, how owners, how coaches think, I wanted to be as real with them as I could so that they could really understand what it takes to make this team, what these coaches are looking for, what's going to happen in training camp with the veterans, how the veterans will tell them, you know, maybe slack off this play or something, I'm not going to hit you, and then they hit you, and then you look bad with your coach. And so I wanted to let them know just exactly what it is that they're in the middle of.
What was their feedback like?
You know what, for the most part, they were all in tune. Some guys would look around a little bit, but they were all in tune for the most part. Some of them said they wanted to come out tonight and really talk with me one-on-one and try to get some more questions out of me, and I'm cool with that. They didn't really have any questions in there, but, you know, they seemed like they were definitely in tune.
Do you feel like you're easily relatable for an NFL rookie just because of the way you came into the league, mm-hmm. you know, undrafted guy, scraping clawing to make a roster? Do you think that kind of got them engaged right away?
Yeah, I think, you know, for any young athlete coming up, I'm kind of easily relatable because of the way I had to fight really to get my whole way through my career period, you know, and nothing was given to me the whole way through. I wasn't like this top high school recruit. I wasn't like a five-star athlete or anything like that. You know, I had to fight for everything. And a lot of it I put myself through. I put myself in those positions, but, you know, it was what it was. It is what it is. And for rookies coming in, for me to be able to let them know that, you know, I was a starter and my career was ended in 3 years because of something that wasn't even had to do on the field, didn't have to do anything on the field. I mean, I was playing good. That's at least what I thought. And it was taken from me that fast. I think they can kind of see that, you know, this thing can be taken from me at any time. It doesn't matter who I am.
Yeah, and, you know, I think by now most Bills fans anyway were up to speed
on why you had to stop playing football because of the kidney disease and the dangers the sport posed to potentially make it life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Transplant last December.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new kidney, and your dad was the donor. How did that process kind of unfold for you?
Man, you know what? I went on a couple different visits. I went to some different teams, and it didn't work out because of the kidney. The condition was getting worse and worse, really, as the days went on. So I decided I had to stop playing, and then it became time now to search for a kidney. And my dad and my family, I mean, everybody wanted to get tested, but my dad was like, I'm going to be the first one. And, you know, he came back a match, and, you know, just the whole way that I had to find my doctors were not easy to find. I mean, they're quote unquote the best, you know, best doctors out there over at New York Presbyterian. And so I had the media people here. Chris Jenkins called down to Miami Heat to speak to Alonzo Mourning. I ended up getting in contact with him, and he put me in contact with the doctor. And so just all of that stuff is really a story in itself, to how it came about. But my dad, you know, it was rough for him. He never really went to the doctor ever. He wasn't with, like, needles and everything. And then they had to, like, take 30 vials of blood from him the first time he went to the doctor. So he was like, it was a big different thing for him. But it worked out well for both of us.
So what was it like to have your dad, knowing those
mm-hmm.
fears that he had, yeah. whether it was needles or given blood or anything like that, to say, I'm going to give you my kid?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It was crazy because, you know, when I was younger, the movie John Q came out, and Denzel Washington was going to kill himself to give his son his heart. And my dad went and saw it. And then he called me after he saw it. I was young. And he was like, just know that I'll do it for you. And so for that to really come to fruition was very surreal. You know, it was amazing that he was able to do that. I'm a blessed person. There's so many people that are on lists waiting for kidneys or waiting for organs, period. So many people that die every year trying to wait for an organ. And for me to be able to get that without having to go through dialysis or any of that, I'm blessed.
And then I think when anybody has a kidney transplant surgery, it's a huge deal, obviously. And I think once people, you know, whether it be the general public that know who you are, once they hear, oh, surgery was successful, you know, they don't think about it anymore. I don't think anybody asks, what is recovery like? I mean, how do you recover from something like mm-hmm. that? What's the process like?
Well, it's for me, I had two surgeries. I had a complication after the first one. And things were pretty bad for me the first couple of days. And then they had to do the second surgery, and it still was pretty bad after that. They had some problems with my stomach and my whole intestinal system in there. And then after that, you know, I was on maybe 16 pills twice a day in the beginning for some months. I had to go from New Jersey to New York twice a week to get blood work done. And then, you know, slowly but surely that came down, the medicines came down, and now I'm on about 8 pills twice a day, but you get used to it, you know. And in the beginning, I was very tired all the time, but you know, my strength came back slowly but surely, and now I'm back to normal.
So when did baseball get on your radar?
Baseball got on my radar before the surgery, actually. I had become interested in playing it only because I wanted to show people that you can come back from something like this and still do what it is you want to do. There was no other publicity for it or anything like that. I just wanted to be a positive, I guess, role model for people that went through the things that I go through. Any type of health issue, whatever your issue may be, it doesn't stop you from doing what you want to do.
So you get to work out with the Somerset Patriots, Independent Atlantic League.
Mm-hmm.
You're working out with them right now, right, still at this point. So how are you balancing that in your life, and how are you looking at that, you know, maybe not looking 10 years down the road, but, you know, in the next couple of years,
mm-hmm.
where do you want to take that, or are there other avenues you think are going to be more beneficial for you to pursue?
Well, I work out with them, of course, when they're home. You know, now that the season has started, they're on the road a lot. They'll be on the road for a week and a half, 2 weeks sometimes. So I'm not able to go over to the stadium as much as I used to. But my high school coach works with me. I play on an independent team with him, actually. He plays in minor league ball. So, you know, he works with me as much as he can. And as far as how far I want to take it, I mean, I would like to take it as all the way to the top. Now, how realistic that may be, I'm not sure. I mean, I have different businesses that I am involved with right now that take a lot of my time. So baseball is an all-day, everyday thing. And for me to dive all the way into baseball and not know how long I might be in the minor leagues before I get to the majors is kind of hard for me to do.
Right. So maybe how would you, just for fun here, let's just talk about baseball a little bit. Outfielder?
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you're mostly? And then how would you describe yourself as a hitter? What would be the description?
You know what? I can hit for power, really. The independent league team that I'm in on right now, I mean, I have 4 home runs right now. I had 3 in the first 3 games. And then as of late, I haven't been able to hit one out. I don't know why. But I guess for me, I can cover the whole outfield as far as defense goes. As a hitter, I hit for power. I can steal every base, of course. You know, I'm fast enough to steal every base. So, you know, I'm pretty much a utility player. I can do it all.
Okay. A little Jose Oquendo of the modern era.
Hey.
So maybe just talk to me about some of these business ventures
mm-hmm.
that you're trying to develop.
Mm-hmm. So some of the things that I'm doing right now. I'm writing a book right now titled The Game of Life. And it has my life story along with some different things about the players of the NFL. And it's really intended for future athletes and people that are coming up that might go through health issues and everything like that. And then, you know, I'm launching a healthcare social media platform next week. Actually, it's entitled restorgan.com. So I put the words restore and organ together and made it restorgan. And it's really intended for, it's designed for, to be able to bring doctors, patients, donors, survivors, nurses, everyone in the health industry together to be able to share their experiences on one platform. We have some great things in the works for the next couple of months. The site is already done. We'll be moving to URL next week, and we'll see how it goes. We're definitely excited about it.
So I'm sure you used some of your contacts from,
oh yeah,
you know, all the kidney physicians that you were dealing with to kind of pull them in
mm-hmm.
and have them on the physician side, I'm guessing. And
yeah.
So there's like a physician side. There's a, for lack of a better term, patient side.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
it's kind of bringing those two worlds together.
It's bringing everybody in together. You know, one of my biggest things, and I was able to talk to different people because of, I guess, the position that I was in, playing in the NFL. But a lot of people can't talk to someone that's just like
them. You can't
call
up Alonzo Mourning.
Right. You can't, you can't just call someone and say, you know, I'm feeling like this today. I have this disease, and I'm feeling like this. And that person might have the same disease and be going through the same thing. It doesn't work like that for most people, and this platform really can help people like that. It can even help someone find an organ or something like that in the future. And we plan on moving into all healthcare eventually. So, you know, it's something that's big. It's something that's going to help a lot of people. You know, and as I said, a doctor can give you, I guess, their perspective, but they've never gone through it, and so they're just giving you really a doctor's perspective. You know, they don't know what what that really feels like. So, you know, to be able to talk to someone else that's going through it is big.
And I'm guessing you'll have a presence on there as well personally, or?
Yes, I'll definitely have a presence on there. You know what, when we launch the site, you'll see my story on there. We'll have three key stories on the main page every month. It'll rotate every month. And if someone wanted to have their story on there, they would just have to email us or, you know, send us a message and we can get their story on there.
So, you know, you had to put your football career behind you.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to be at peace with that?
Oh, man. You know what? It really wasn't as hard as everyone thinks to walk away from football. And it wasn't because, I mean, I guess the reason it was so easy was because it wasn't like I wasn't good enough to play anymore. It was because of health issues. So I wanted to be here for my son. You know, he's four. Well, he'll be four in August. I wanted to be here to see him grow to an adult. And so the decision to walk away wasn't that hard. I mean, I guess it hurt when they first told me that you won't be able to play anymore. You're going to have to get a transplant. It hurt. I cried. I was depressed for about a week, but I got over it right after that. And I didn't really walk away for another couple months, but I had already been mentally preparing to walk away anyway, so it wasn't that hard.
And when it's a life and death decision, I guess it makes it a little bit
easier,
exactly.
Too. It makes it a little bit easier. Now, if you're someone who the coaches, nobody's calling you for any jobs or anything like that, then, you know, that hurts because it's like you still feel like you can play. But that wasn't me. I mean, even my doctors cleared me, and I still had, I guess I went over to New England. They released me because of the health stuff. And I still had maybe eight teams call me that wanted to sign me, and I decided, no, I can't do it. So, you know, it wasn't that hard for me.
So what would you call your most cherished memory as a professional football player here in Buffalo?
My most cherished memory will always be the guys in the locker room, my teammates. You know, the fans love their Bills here in Buffalo, and I'll always cherish that. I'll always talk to the fans on Twitter and everything like that. I cherish that. But those guys in the locker room and being around those guys, Stevie and even Lee Evans and Roscoe and Fred, all of those guys that were here when I first got here, those memories will never go away.
So that was Donald Jones, who is here at One Bills Drive today, spoke with the rookies here for an hour to tell them what to expect in their rookie year as they try, many of them try, to make the roster coming up here very quickly in training camp. And obviously he has a lot of irons in the fire, writing a book, trying to launch a website, and obviously is trying to resuscitate a baseball career. Donald Jones, great interview, even better person. We'll take a break. One final segment coming back on the other side. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Chris Brown here with you, filling in for Murph, who's under the weather this week. Hope to have him back next week. An abbreviated show tonight, so one final segment here before we step aside for Game 4 coverage of the NBA Finals with the San Antonio Spurs leading 2-1. That'll be coming your way very shortly here. Here in our final segment, though, with OTAs closing up, I wanted to kind of run down my list of the top three players that I felt really were the most impressive performers through the course of these 3-plus weeks of OTA practices. And for me, the number three performer is Sammy Watkins. I mean, the rookie, the top draft choice, really has lived up to expectations. He missed a couple of days during the rookie premiere out in L.A., comes back the next time he is on the practice field. He makes 8 catches and dominates the practice. Now, what I'm waiting to see is when he is on the field facing the likes of Stephon Gilmore and Leotis McKelvin, who really didn't get a lot of teamwork here in the practice setting due to the fact that both are coming off offseason surgeries. I'm hoping we get a chance to at least see some of those matchups in the mandatory minicamp, even though both Gilmore and McKelvin are expected to be limited. As far as my number two guy, the most impressive player in OTAs, I'm going with Corey Graham. The free agent signee and Buffalo native was nothing short of impressive through the course of the OTAs and was very consistent from start to finish in these voluntary practices, getting his hands in the passing lanes an awful lot, had 2 interceptions in 1 practice, just has a veteran savvy about him out there on the field, reads things quickly, anticipates well, and makes a lot of plays. He has quickly earned a whole host of respect from the rest of his defensive teammates in a very short period of time. So Corey Graham has done well, not only outside a cornerback, but also when he shifted inside in the slot. It's going to be a very interesting competition in training camp for that slot corner role between him and Nickell Robey, the guy who landed the job last year as an undrafted rookie. And then number one on my list for most impressive player in the OTA setting, wide receiver Chris Hogan, a guy that looks like an absolutely different player this year. Now, granted, the pads aren't on yet. We haven't seen him face press coverage on a daily basis. But in this setting right now, he has been very, very impressive. He is a guy that I think has improved as a route runner. I think his speed on the field has improved. I think more as a byproduct of the fact that he knows what he's doing out there. He's not thinking anymore. And I think he's been the guy with the most consistent hands out there among the receiving core. He has not dropped a single pass, and he was thrown too often because in the first week of OTAs, this guy was working out of the slot with Robert Woods off the practice field coming off an off-season surgery. So those are my top three, but that'll put a cap on the show here tonight, an abbreviated version of the John Murphy Show. Tomorrow, we will have the best of the John Murphy Show, and I'll walk you through that tomorrow beginning at 7 here on Buffalo Bills Radio. Thanks for listening. Have a good night, everybody.